This encore program for Fire on the Earth was chosen based on the request from many listeners.
Fire on the Earth. Our Holy Father has said the Church is missionary by her very nature. The Church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the Church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. It's my great delight this week to be able to introduce to you a good friend. Chuck Greenwood is here. Chuck is a member of our parish at Christ the King in Ann Arbor, Michigan, a man I've known over the years and just recently retired from a long and illustrious career. And I've asked Chuck to come in and share a little bit about his own story and his own testimony. And so, actually, we're taping this morning. He thought he was just coming to pick up a couple of CDs. He showed up and we miscommunicated. I was intending to have him be with us today in the recording. So he's kind enough at the last minute to be surprised and to join us anyway to come in to share his story. So welcome, Chuck. Good to have you.
Good morning, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, your story, there's so much to your story, but let's just start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where you're from, your background, kind of who you are, and how you were raised, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm a Wisconsin kid.
Okay.
Grew up in Wisconsin. My parents grew up there. We grew up there as well. I was a Green Bay Packer fan before I could do anything else. Everybody, you know, worshiped the Packers there. I was born and raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
By my parents, they were very, very diligent, good Catholic parents. So I grew up in the church, and I grew up with a love for the church. It took me to everything. Even when we were little, I remember going to, in those days, everybody went to Saturday night, you know, services and the litanies, and I didn't know pray for us was a word. I thought it was pray for us, you know, because that's all everybody's mumbled, and so I did that too. But it's amazing how those kind of things stick with you. So I grew up as just kind of a normal kid. I had some interesting birth experiences we can talk about later, but other than that, it appeared to me to be a very, you know, a normal childhood.
How big of a family did you have?
There were five of us. I had an older sister and an old brother, so I was the youngest of three.
Okay. Yeah, very good. And then, so you grew up in Wisconsin. Where'd you end up going to college?
I ended up going to college at the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Okay.
I would love to have gone to Madison, Wisconsin, but I was a football player, but I wasn't fast enough.
Oh, yeah.
I was too slow. I was big enough.
Yeah, so did you play it?
I played at UW.
What'd you play? What position?
A defensive end.
Okay.
But I was about 280 pounds at that time, so I was actually pretty good size in that era. I was just way too slow for the big time.
Yeah, and so you get out of college, and what were when you got out of college, or even let's talk about your college years, what kind of role did faith play in your life at that time?
You know, that was a tough time for me. I mean, I went to college literally in the middle of the 60s, in the middle of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as well as, you know, rebellion in our country, the Vietnam War and that whole thing. And I mean, there was demonstrations on campus, you know, there was that whole kind of a negative world out there. Our culture was changing.
Mm-hmm.
Things that I'd held, you know, near and dear to my heart were being challenged in every direction.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I was more self-absorbed than I was faith-absorbed. I just kind of looked at everything through a prism of what it meant to me, and even if it was uncomfortable, how it challenged me and what it did. But I really kind of left my faith back at home when I went away to school.
Sure.
And I really kind of just focused on what was happening there. I thought it was interesting, but it was scary. I mean, people were being, you know, we had the assassinations of presidents and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and all of this was happening, you know, within the prism of trying to be at school and allegedly getting an education. But I look back on it now, and it really, you know, it really shook my world.
Yeah. When you left campus, when you graduated, did you have a particular career goal in mind? And where were you? I mean, were you a hard charger? What were you doing at the time?
Like I say, based upon my early life, I was really, I don't know if I'll call a hard charger, but I was extremely competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt I needed to succeed. I had to succeed at whatever I did. I really wanted to be a football coach and a history teacher.
Hmm.
But my father told me early in life, there's no money in that. And so, you know, I was in the College of Business. That was what you did. And but even if I was going to be in the College of Business, then I was going to succeed. And I would have to do whatever it took to succeed. I was more focused on success in whatever shape that took. My senior year, my wife, right before my senior year, we got married. Diane and I got married. We eloped during the summer, and we decided we had There was, we were engaged at the time, but there were a lot of family issues on both sides that we thought, this is going to be crazy if we had try to have a marriage here. Yeah. I mean, a wedding.
Yeah.
And so we just decided to get married. We got married, and Diane became a Catholic in about a two-week period of time, which is highly unique. this day of our CIA, that would be unheard of, but this was the 60s, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the Father Michael at that time said, you know, if I don't convert this woman now, she's never going to become Catholic. So let's do it. And we got married. So that kind of shaped it, too. I was just not one person going off, and now it became two people.
Okay.
And but what I wanted to do was, I worked even when I was going to school, I worked at jobs in business for the summertime to try to get an edge up on people in interviews. I wanted to get that. I was kind of driven towards success. And I didn't come from a big name school. This is not an Eastern school or something like that.
Right.
And so I figured I had to have any edge I could get. And so I really took jobs instead of just doing regular summer kind of work, which paid more. I would be willing to intern at places, and I would do other things that would give me some business background.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, your career had an amazing kind of trajectory, and which you just retired from as a senior executive for Masco Corporation, a massive corporation.
Right.
But how did your career end up taking off? Then what was the faith journey in the midst of all that?
It's interesting. My, you know, like I say, when I got to college, I kind of left my faith at home, and it was there. I got married a Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, my wife became Catholic, but it wasn't part of my life.
Yeah.
When I was very young, it was a huge part of my life, and it stayed with me forever. I didn't realize that until forever started coming.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a main focus of my life. I did not make decisions based on my faith. I did not make decisions. I got to church sometimes. Sometimes I didn't get to Mass, you know? So it was really that I kind of put, that was a nice thing, but now I really had to focus on my career, and that came first.
Okay, so that was first, and then at one point you told me you ended up with a pretty good job in New York City. How long did it take you to get there?
It didn't take me as long as you'd think. I graduated in 1969, and I ended up in New York City in 1975. But what I did is I went with International Paper Company, which is a very large corporation, and I was in human resources, and you know, there was a million HR people, it seemed, in that company. It was huge, huge organization. And I just said, I would take any job anywhere that nobody else wants. So I figured I had to gain notoriety. And Diane and I moved, you know, five times in 6 years. And the last one being in New York City. And a job I turned down. First time I turned it down. I was in Philadelphia at that time. We'd moved enough times. And the vice president of human resources called me up and said, I don't think you understand. I want you to reconsider this offer. And I said, I'm really not sure I can afford to live in New York City. He says, Chuck, if you have to eat peanut butter and beans, you're going to come to New York City. and so I did. I reconsidered and accepted the job. But it really, I mean, from a career standpoint, that really, I was 30 years old, and it just set my career off.
And so what happened there? I mean, other changes began to come, but tell us a little bit about that.
That was a crazy time in New York City.
Yeah.
And I was absorbed. You know, here's a kid from Wisconsin. I didn't know much, but New York City played to my weaknesses. You know, I was pretty self-absorbed. I was interested in succeeding. And so I would do whatever it took, you know, whether it's adapting to people or the culture, I thought, to succeed. And the culture in New York City was pretty crazy at that point in time. Those were the days of, you know, Saturday Night Fever and Studio 54 and the old Broadway when it was pretty trashy.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a lot of glitter and there was a lot of temptation. And people really were out for, I mean, it sounds like a stereotype, but people really were out for themselves.
Yeah.
But what I began to see as I was kind of going through that, part of my mind opened up and I saw a lot of people searching for that and then having it just cut off from them in a split second. And then they were out of a job. They have been very high-level people that were very unhappy people and disengaged. I couldn't understand that because I would have done anything at that point in time to succeed. And yet they were just kind of, I saw them, being in human resources, part of my job was to manage them walking out the door with their briefcase. Maybe after 30 years of a career or whatever it is or more. And it began to dawn on me, but my drive was so great that I figured, well, those guys didn't know it as well as I do. I figured this game out.
You're not going that way.
I figured this game out. I know how to play this game.
Yeah.
You know, and of course I was overmatched in every way, shape, or form, but I didn't know that.
How did you come to terms with that? How did you come to discover you were overmatched?
It was not till later on. I thought at the time when I was in New York City, because everything was success. I had known nothing but success. A kid from, like I say, a Division II school in Wisconsin, you know, sitting in New York City, working for the VP of Human Resources of a, you know, at that time, a $15 billion company.
Yeah.
And I was 30 years old. You know, and I thought I was everything. I mean, I thought I was just, I really thought I was.
He was a cat's pajamas.
I was, yeah. You know, I could have, I have pictures of myself then, which are just embarrassing. You know, I look like John Travolta, you know, Saturday Night Fever thing, the long hair and the, it's now it's hilarious. My children just love those pictures because, I mean, they just shake their head and said, really?
You know?
But anyway. But I thought this was great. You know, I thought it was pretty.
So when did the transformation, the bubble begin to burst for you?
The bubble began to burst is when I hired this guy who came in. He was a graduate. I mean, he had a graduate degree from Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
He was brilliant. He was a technologist. And I hired him as our VP of technology. And but there was something I could tell from the interviews. This guy was one of the most pleasant, happy, brilliant guys I've ever met. I've never seen somebody so happy. In New York City, people are not that happy. They're intense, but they're not necessarily happy.
Yeah.
And he was just, it was somebody from the moment I interviewed him and we ended up hiring him, I wanted to be, I found excuses to try to talk to him or to be with him or be around him because I couldn't figure him out. I could figure everybody else out, but I couldn't figure out where he was at. And so I just kind of gravitated towards this guy as I was, you know, working in my job. But I saw that he was different than other people. And there was something, like I say, that attracted to me and him that I said, I really like that. This guy is a happy man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that happy. I'm successful, but I'm not happy.
And how could he be that happy?
How could he
in
be
this world
happy?
That we're living in right here? Yeah.
Yeah. And he's you know, I've got all these things in my mind. This guy's walking around like he's just, you know, he discovered the mother lode, which of course he had.
Yeah. Well, what was the difference? You have just about a minute here before we'll have more time this week. Hopefully you can stay with us throughout the week. But the bottom line, what did he have and what did you see there?
I walked into his office one day and I said, whatever you've got, I want it.
Hmm.
I have to have it.
Hmm.
He says, I got Jesus.
Wow.
If you want it, we'll pray right now, right here, and I'll ask him to come into your life. And we did that.
Is that right?
Yeah. Right in the middle of Manhattan, in the same building, New York Daily News building, that Superman filmed his movie in, but the real Superman came, you know, the Holy Spirit came. Right
Is
in
that,
that office.
Right?
Shut the door, middle of Manhattan.
How about that?
What a country.
What a country, yeah. What a game changer, too.
Unbelievable game changer.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll have time tomorrow. We can take some time to pick up right here. Friends, Chuck's story is just beginning, and I've heard more and more about it, and the Lord really took Chuck on an amazing journey that he's kind enough to be willing to share with us throughout the rest of this week, and I think you're going to find it both very inspiring and very, very encouraging. For your own life. So I encourage you to tune in tomorrow and ask your friends to tune into the program. And if they can't, they could always go to our website at renewalministries.net. The program is archived there. They can listen to it on the computer or download it and listen to it on their iPod when it's convenient. But until tomorrow, this is Peter Herbeck and Chuck Greenwood reminding you that the Lord has a plan for each and every one of us because he loves us and he's called us to follow him. God bless you. Have a good day.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'm delighted to be able to offer you my new booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? At the heart of the new evangelization is a fresh proclamation of the gospel. But for many people, even many Catholics, they wonder, what is the message? What exactly is at the heart of that proclamation? In this simple booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message?, I take a look at and present in a very specific and simple way what is the core of what we're called to proclaim in this great and important missionary moment in the history of the church. If you'd like a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.